For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
This is the High Hopes Podcast.
High Hopes.
On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
The crowd was singing High Hopes, smiling through a broken nose. Oh, High Hopes, High Hopes.
I feel a little less alone.
Yo, it is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast, and that, honestly, the Phillies have earned a yo, it is, yo there. That yo was because we will try and talk as little about the Twin Series as possible, because we got a special guest coming on today, our guy back on the pod, not Bill, Brian. That's coming up later, we'll get to that in a little bit. Fritzy, man.
I know. So we already recorded the pod with Barbara.
Yes, I'm flying high. You're like, flying high.
Couldn't be happier.
I say it even during it, but the smile on Jack's face, the whole thing, it was like literally a kid.
How can
Christmas.
You not be happy talking about A.J. Wilson? I don't get it. And then I think about yesterday.
95% of the audience going, who's A.J. Wilson?
Exactly.
But yes, yes.
Maybe less than 95%,
well,
honestly.
Now,
I would say 2% of the audience.
Yeah.
But it's big stuff. It's stuff that matters. But then I start thinking about the baseball team, and I think about yesterday, and I think about this Twin Series, and I think about the last three series. And I'm so mad they're doing this.
I know.
Like, I'm so mad that they're doing this because they look like they're leaking oil,
well,
which is annoying.
Yesterday was another, what we talked about in the last pod, like, it was like the first game out of the break. It was like the 8-7 game. It was yesterday was the second game since the All-Star break that felt like the 2018 Phillies, the 2020 Phillies, 2019. Like, I mean, again, like, how does that happen? You're up 4-1. Kirkring hits a dude. Brandon Marsh can't catch a baseball. Like, Soto looks good for so long, gets into a high leverage spot, blows it. Like, it was classic Phillies.
Yeah, we got
it.
Listen, I have been on the Gregory Soto's pitching well thing, mm-hmm. but there's still no chance I trust him in
any.
He's not a high leverage guy. Some guys are high leverage guys, some guys are not.
Exactly.
And like, I know he had a million, like 30 saves for the Tigers, but Detroit.
Yeah, and he also had like a 4 year, you know, it was not that great.
He lost 17 games that year, I think, or something for a reliever.
Insane like that.
Just insane. Yeah. So like, I'm disappointed in how they're playing right now. Obviously, like, it's not the end of the world. Like, I think, like, it's funny because I genuinely do believe this. Like, it doesn't really matter how they're playing right now.
They still have the biggest lead in baseball. Their 9-game lead over the Braves is the biggest of any division. They're still the top in the National League. They're top in baseball still.
I know, but I just don't feel that right
well,
now.
Well, I know, and now they're going to play the other best. I mean, Cleveland's legit, you know?
Yeah. I know. I still think they're Mickey Mouse.
They're 60-41 or whatever, 60-40 or something.
Dude, I knew the Yankees weren't playing well.
Yeah.
I didn't have any idea how bad it's been.
It's been a disaster.
I think they're 11-23.
Yeah. Dude, it's been like, it's all people talk about up there now. It's like, it's falling apart.
Yeah.
It happens every year, though, with the Yankees. This is like on par. Like,
it's ridiculous. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they go those two, Seattle, who Julio's hurt right now. They're struggling offensively.
Seattle, for the first time in a long time, has given up the AL West lead. Remember, we were all like, oh, Astros are done. They're cooked. It's all over. They might trade Kyle Tucker. Guess what? The Astros are in first place today.
Well, I will say, they've done all this with Kyle Tucker on the IL.
I know.
Hashtag.
Trust me. My fantasy team knows, buddy. My fantasy team knows.
I'm just maybe, and this might be a directive to whoever runs the Astros
now. Oh, I see
now.
What you're doing here. That's good.
Better without Tucker? You want to send him here?
I mean, look, you know.
Send him here.
Yeah, I mean, this podcast is better without our producer, Tucker.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's possible.
So we'll take him. If you would like to get rid of Kyle Tucker, we'll gladly take him.
And I'm just kidding, Tucker. I love you, buddy. Don't take it too personally.
We're just kidding.
Yeah.
But, yes, so, like, I just... It's because the sloppiness is back, which is annoying. The bad base running's back. The offense is having me feel like the NLCS all over again, where it's like that pit in your stomach of like...
It's like maybe you get an inning.
They didn't score for 16 innings and then got three off Duran somehow.
Which, by the way, real quick, the Castellanos quote, one of the... Like, it's not Scooby-Doo level hilarious, but when Kevin Stocker asked him, hey, you know, they're telling us it's a 98 mile per hour split finger coming in there. Like, what are you seeing? And he goes, I'm seeing a ball coming in really fast. And then it drops. And then Stocker's like, so yeah, that'd be a split.
That plays. That plays.
Like, Nick, dude, you really do just go up there and just see ball hit
just
ball.
Just absolute
That's
vibes.
The only science that there is there with Nick Cassio.
Yeah, it's absolute vibes. It actually reminds me of my first home run that I ever hit. Uh-huh. So I have one career home run.
Nice. You and Bartolo Colon.
And it was off a kid who ended up getting drafted. So, like,
that's a pretty good one.
Well, here's the story. Is he threw, I don't know, we were like 13, 14. And he was, like, sitting low to mid-80s.
At 13?
Like, 13, like I think maybe 14 to 15. But, yeah, he was
that
throwing pretty hard.
Hard.
He was hard. Yeah, like, he.
Hard. I don't think I ever saw above, like, 75 at that age. 70. Even, like, older than that.
He actually ended up going to UVA as a catcher and then became a pitcher again. But I remember facing him, and I hit a changeup out that I thought was a fastball. I was like, dude, I turned it around on him. You see that, coach? And then I think my coach said, stop being happy we lost. I was like, I don't know, man. Like, that's my first ever home run. Yeah. I'm like a big field. So, yeah, it's just the Cassianos thing. Actually, there's
I don't think I've ever heard you talk about hitting before.
I know.
Might be the very first time you've ever brought up you hitting.
The only time I ever bring up me hitting is my freshman year on JV. I hit 353.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stud.
Yeah.
I didn't love it.
Yeah, I know. You never bring it up. It wasn't
a big hitting guy. But the Cassianos thing is actually interesting because out of nowhere, all of a sudden, he's developed a two-strike approach. Have you noticed that, like, he's laying off stuff, dude. Well, it's that, but he's also keeping his foot on the ground.
Yeah.
And not, like, doing the leg kick thing.
Yeah. So, he's actually, numbers-wise, been great for him.
So
he's got like a 910 OPS, 907 OPS or something.
I know you're a huge fan of weighted runs created plus.
It's my favorite.
I like Woba more, but
I do. Honestly, I've never paid any attention to weighted runs plus. What rated runs?
Weighted
plus?
Runs created plus.
Created. I forgot the created. There.
By weighted runs created plus.
No, is that WRC? Plus?
WRC, well, okay, lowercase W.
So I've seen that, but I did not know what that.
Have you seen it on the Philly scoreboard? It's easier to find weighted runs created plus.
And it's like average, I know.
The horizontal vertical movement of the pitch and expected WOBA than it is to find the counts, the
how many pitches the pitcher has.
The miles per hour. I see MVR, which every time mound visits remaining, I don't care.
That is the single number one question I've been asked at Phillies games over the last
MVR?
2 years. What is MVR?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I'm so glad they got rid of the nice old fashioned scoreboard.
Also, though, like, I know, like, seriously, we've talked about this, but, like, seriously, so much stuff we don't need. The mound visits remaining thing, though, like, has once every 5 years a manager runs out of mound visits. Like, do we really need to know how many are remaining? Do they ever get to the point where, like, it's at zero. Look, it's at zero. No more mound visits. Does that ever happen? I don't remember.
Boo-boo.
Do you remember a time where, I think we had one time where we had a mound visit they didn't have, or was it two in an inning? I think they did once. But, like, how often do managers run out of mound visits?
Well, it's ridiculous. I like how mad you got about mound visits remaining. I appreciate that.
I know.
But final point here. Like, and tweet us, email us if you feel this. If you've gone to the ballpark and you're with your buddies, have you ever said, man, I wonder what his WOBA is?
I know.
Like, everyone, like, again, you talk about knowing your audience. I would say 5% of people even know what it is.
Yeah.
Like, batting average, we just learned about it. OPS is just starting to heat up. Yep. Okay. You know,
yeah, I know, right? Yeah, exactly.
OPS is pretty simple.
I feel like people are finally like, okay, I think I know how OPS is put together. Yeah,
I get it. The horizontal movement of the
and
pitches.
It's just adding two things together. Like, that's as, OPS is as easy as it gets.
You know what I would do instead of horizontal movement and vertical? I would say, Ched. Or that pitch was dirty. You know what I mean? Like, simple as that. Like, we're not sitting there breaking down the inches of the horizontal movement.
I agree. Cosine.
Yeah, rant over. But, like, it's just for a team that's been so locked in, they kind of look like they put it into cruise control a little bit. And that's the frustrating part. Like, the season's not over. It's frustrating. I think it's more of a tough stretch than, like, big concern. I think there are concerns. Stott's a concern, 100%.
Big time.
Marsh is a concern, 100%. Like,
well, yeah, Marsh, Pache. Like, the whole outfield hitting situation is a concern.
And the bullpen now is entered into the chat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bullpen is now something where it's like, they were so good. They do have talent, but they're leaking oil. Like, Kirkering is 100% leaking oil.
Yeah.
And what's
Did you hear the stat that Fransky said yesterday?
No.
So Kirkering has six hits by pitch, six batters hit by pitch. Zach Wheeler leads the team with seven in 100 more innings. I mean, Kirkering got to stop hitting guys.
Well, and the frustrating part about that is that Kirkering has good command.
Yeah.
I think he has good command. For some reason, he's lost confidence in the fastball, which I don't know why. Again, like, what made him what Kirkering looks like right now is late or playoff Kirkering last year.
Yeah.
And what made Kirkering so exciting, like, you talk about the Met series, talk about how he was, like, pitching in that middle portion, was he was dominating with his fastball and letting the sweeper work off it. Again, it's not a sweeper that I think you can throw over and over again and get guys out. It's not an A.J. Wilson sweeper.
That's good work.
It's not that pitch. It's a really...
That's coming up, by the way. It's coming up. Just so you know.
It's a really good pitch, but I think it only works really well off of the fastball. And eventually, I would like to see him work in... I think he could develop into a third pitch, like a changeup or a splitter.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not giving up on Kirkering. It's just for some reason he's getting away from that fastball. I'd like to get back to that. Strom, you know, I still trust Strom with my life, pretty much.
I mean, Brandon Marsh should have caught that ball. Like, I'm sorry.
Now, it probably...
I know it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy, but Brandon Marsh should get to that baseball.
It probably would have been out at CBP, but regardless.
But it wasn't CBP.
It was not CBP, and he knew that.
Yes. But,
and Brandon Marsh, by the way, I think Thompson said post game was not the shoulder. I totally disagree. I think that was more.
It looked like he couldn't even move the. It was absolutely the shoulder. I don't believe that for a second.
And then, like, what are we doing? Like, he can't.
Why is he out there?
Just put Weston Wilson out there.
Why is he out there? What are we doing?
So that was frustrating from yesterday. And Soto, obviously not. Alvarado, they're giving clearly an extended rest here.
Which they should. And by the way, Kirkering, too, to the point. I mean, this is a guy who was in college a little over a year ago. Like, you know, or high A, like, a year ago. College a couple years ago. Like, it wouldn't be surprising if he needs a little blow, too, at some point. Like, mm-hmm. pitching Kirkering all season long feels like a dangerous game.
Yeah. And I think that's... The problem is you're having it from... Three guys?
Yeah.
Like, you're having it from all of them at the same time?
Like, Hoffman's the only one who looks the same.
Dude, by the way.
What a stud, dude.
So, I was thinking
I
about
love
this.
Him.
I was thinking about this yesterday. I know, for my money, he's in the top five relievers they've had in my lifetime. No doubt about it. And I wonder how close he is to one. Like, I think Wagner's up there. Lidge, mm-hmm. obviously, we know that.
Has to be Madsen's up
and
there.
And I think Hoffman's right there. I think that's how good he is. I mean,
it's a bold statement, like, but right now in this moment, he is.
Just
yes.
watching him.
He's having one of the best Phillies reliever seasons of our life.
He has a one.
I mean, Alvarado for a stretch. So
Alvarado
put in there
for
too.
A stretch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
2018 Sir Anthony.
Yeah.
Who could forget? He's a 1.08 ERA.
Dude, I know.
Like, he is. He is.
And he's
sick.
A bulldog.
I know.
Like, he really, you know, we use that term sometimes. Like, he feels like a bulldog on the mound.
In my dream scenario, they get someone for the 7th, 8th.
And he's
the
ninth. Oh, I think he's the closer. For me, he is my closer. I want Jeff Hoffman to close game. I want him in the big spots and stuff, but, like, I just feel like he's got that mentality. He's got the way he attacks it. And he's also huge and intimidating. Like, everything about him just feels like a closer.
And if they don't extend Jeff Hoffman,
I'm
going to
riot.
Lose it.
We're riot.
He's that important.
Yeah.
He's that important.
He can get paid, my friend.
Yeah, so I think 2 years, 22 with an option is about fair. It's $11 million a year.
I think he'd probably be more than that.
25?
Yeah. I mean, like, they got Strom at a discount, so use a little extra money to get Hoffman. Whatever it takes.
And I don't think he would leave. First off, I think they're going to pay him. But, like, he has Cotham here.
The Phillies took him off the scrap heap. I do think, you know,
GM Bryce, baby.
Yeah. By the way, back to the game yesterday, because, you know, we're going to get to Brian Barber in a minute, and I do want to talk trade deadline. But, Bryce's comments. I think that's the one other thing that we should talk about coming off of yesterday's game before we get to Barber and the trade deadline and whatnot. But, you know, Bryce very critical of the team, which I appreciated, and you know, was clearly not happy. But, you know, I think the most interesting part at the end of, like, the little answer, you know, question answer session, you know, he gets asked about the trade deadline, and he basically, you know, says Dave will get it done if he wants to.
I know.
What did you mean? It was like, if he wants to, it was such a weird bad on there, man.
It really was.
What? Well, I didn't know if it was a challenge. I didn't know if it was, like, I don't know. I was really hard to parse.
Well, so I didn't hear the audio. You have the audio. Like, you played it this morning.
Oh, so you haven't heard it yet.
No.
He says it pretty quickly. It's not like a big pause or anything. He goes, like, Dave will get it done if he wants to. Like, it's pretty, like, he says it as a sentence.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that, like, my read on that obviously is, like, please give, you got to give up some of the farm here to go get some difference makers.
Bryce saying, like, Dave, go do this.
Yeah. Like, no marginal ads again. Yeah. Like, let's go get some real difference makers in here. And that's what Bryce has done here, man.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, yeah. I mean, even when he's not intending to, like, Jeff Hoffman turns out to be a difference maker.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I think that, like, Bryce knows. And I think these guys know. And while the vibes I do think are really important, I think that now the vibe-ness has been worn off a little bit, given how they've, again, dude.
Because it's a grind. That happens in the season. It's a long season.
But at the same time, like, they are 19-19 since London.
That's pretty crazy.
It's a pretty extended stretch of 500
38
ball.
Games.
It's not nothing.
I didn't realize that. They're 19-19 since London.
Mm-hmm.
Don't love that.
They're 24-20 since June 1st.
I don't love that.
No.
I'm not going to lie to you.
So, like, again,
yeah,
camaraderie, special clubhouse matters, but, like, you got to go get guys that are going
to
take guys
out of
jobs.
So let's get into it, and then we'll get to Brian Barber. The deadline thing, we are 5 days out. Coming up on Sunday, we'll do our perfect deadline, assuming Dave doesn't scoop us, which if he does, fine. Yeah,
whatever.
Exactly. We'll just react to the trades themselves.
And let's put it this way. I know your schedule. I know. But we're pretty much.
I'll be around.
Pretty much in the breaking news.
I will be ready to record at any point if necessary this weekend. I am there. Unless I'm doing a radio show and then I'll record after that, but that's about it. So where are you at? I know the Garrett Crochet rumor came out, which is something you had mentioned to me as a possibility. Morosi puts that out there. Obviously, Luis Robert, same team has been mentioned. You know, we've got mixed messaging coming out as shocking, you know, from the reporters, you know. Some people saying, you know, we had Bowden, we all remember, saying he'll give up the farm. We got Jason Stark out there saying he's not going to make a big trade. Like, it's kind of like mixed messaging out there. Where you at?
I'm about this close away from saying I'm never trusting Jim Bowden. Like, he's again, and not to totally rip him, but, like, he put an article out today saying that the White Sox will trade or should trade Luis Robert to the Phillies for, like, Mick Abel and Justin Crawford. It's like, dude,
what?
Like, can you just do an ounce of research?
Just pay attention
just
a little bit.
An ounce, you know? So he's losing a lot of credibility in my eyes. So that's fine. But whatever. It's just where I'm at is that I think this happens with the local guys is that, like, again, a couple years ago, is Ben Brown's untouchable. Logan O'Hoppe's untouchable. So I think that what's happening now is a bit of a tempering of expectations. Like, they could go get Lane Thomas and Brandon Finnegan, and they're letting everyone know, like, that could be an option. But that does not make me think that they're not in on big fishes, that they're not in on a real difference-making move. I just think that they don't want to set the expectations so high so that if you don't get that done, then they're in the position of getting crushed.
So I think the one issue with this deadline, and partially because a lot of teams are in it, and partially just because of the way it's chicken out, is there aren't a ton of, at least, look, there usually is a guy who gets traded we don't expect, and that's certainly possible that we're not hearing rumors about or whatever, but there aren't that many big fishes on the table right now in terms of what the Phillies' needs are. You know, if we're talking about an outfielder, it seems like Robert is kind of the big fish. You know, like, it doesn't seem like that, you know, there are other good players.
Randy?
Huh?
Randy's a big fish.
Oh, Randy, but he is, but he's not. He's not even as big of, like, he's like, Randy's a big fish, and then he's played well in the playoffs, but he's not been great this year. Like, he's having a down year.
He's also technically not a fish. He's a ray.
He's a ray. It's a good point. He also doesn't have the same level of control as Robert and all that, but even still, like, Robert, the point is Robert at his ceiling is a better player than a Rosarena, or at least Robert's tools are better than Rosarena's tools is kind of where I'm going.
Sure.
But I agree. Randy, because of the playoff stuff, would feel big. But point being, like, we're not talking about Juan Soto out there. We're not talking about Kyle Tucker out there. We're not talking about, like, the best players in the sport on the market. What do you think, like, how in do you think they really are on Robert and potentially Crochet and both of them, and what do you think it would take to get there?
Yeah, so I think that in my gut, it tells me that I think that they're in. I think they would try to get both. Because
if they did it, they would just make it a double.
Right, because at this point, if you're going to go to the prospects for one of them, just, like,
go the extra mile.
And again, I don't know how you say no. Like, this season is is, for the most part, outside the last 3 weeks, has been viewed as special. And we've talked a lot about how these kind of opportunities, these kind of seasons don't happen very often. With you have the starting staff the way they are. You have the lineup, the Bryce year, the Trey year, the Boehm year, like a lot of things are aligned.
And the mentality where the team itself has only had one goal and one focus and they're all like, that's it.
And the other injuries around the sport have to be factored in. Mm-hmm. Whether you've been talking about the Braves, the Dodgers injuries,
like Mookie Betts, the whole thing.
A lot of things are like, okay, this is the year. If you have the opportunity, and again, like I love Aiden Miller, love Andrew Painter. In a perfect world, I don't want to trade one of them for the guys. But like, I don't know how you don't just put at least one of them on the table with like Caba, Clausen, and Justin Crawford, who again, Justin Crawford's been really good
at
Double A.
It's
a huge package.
It's all your top guys other than one of the top two, essentially. You're keeping
the catcher, the young catcher in the organization. You're keeping some of the other guys.
No, there are guys coming down the road, but you're basically giving up all but one of your top 100 prospects.
And you're trusting our guys, Brian Barber and Preston Mattingly.
Which is why I would do, I think that's a big reason why I'm willing to trade prospects, because I do believe in the drafting and development. Mm-hmm. Now, and I think that they will bring more guys in and they will continue to hit on guys. So like, I think there'll be a surplus of talent that we can pull from. But we're also talking about the Phillies and we're talking about giving up, you know, four of their five guys in the top 100 in this trade.
Yeah, and neither you or I are the old school bleh prospects or trade them all. We're not like that.
No.
Like it actually does matter having prospects here for the long run. But at the same time, Luis Robert's here for 3 more years.
Yeah,
Crochet's here for 2 more years. They probably extend him. Like, I don't know how you don't have those three, all young, by the way. Crochet is 25, Robert's 26. Like, that could also be your future core.
Right, exactly.
So, I don't know how you turn it down because of prospects. When you have the team you have right now, you do need some young talent, and the upside is just the upside. Crochet, we talked about, is on an innings limit. You know, maybe if now there is rumors that if you trade for him and sign to an extension, you can throw the innings limit out. So, I mean, that could be an opportunity as well. But the reason why I think I'm so like crocheted up, Flaherty was mentioned. Doesn't really make sense for me.
Well, other than the fact that he's not a long term deal.
And he's very good.
Yeah, like, well, he's really good.
Yeah, he's having a good year.
Yeah.
But like Crochet is more enticing to me because
there's future there.
And he can go to the bullpen.
Right.
Like I think when we're talking about.
You don't think Flaherty, I don't think they would do that, but you don't think Flaherty could throw out? I mean, he could throw hard.
No, I know, but Crochet looks like an Andrew Miller.
Yeah, I know. Oh, and Crochet, I mean, he's only got two, like, he doesn't even have a bunch of pitches, guys.
He's pitched 24 innings in the last 3 years. He's at 111 already. Like, that's a ton. So there's risk there, 100%.
Big time.
But like, dude, if you put him in the bullpen with like Strom from the left side, Alvarado hopefully on his way back, Crochet, who if you want to, again, you talk about 7-8, Hoffman 9th, it's lockdown. Yeah. I mean, Crochet out of this bullpen is lockdown. I think going out and getting Robert, I want Randy really bad too. Like, I think if in a perfect world, it's like, I would like Randy and Crochet, but like, whatever. Robert, I think, is still really, really good. It's a high prospect cost, but
Randy, because he costs less.
I love the playoff riser.
I trust him more. Yeah, I trust him. Robert, like, I think the talent is more. But again, you know, who knows?
He's also, all right, the other thing on Robert real quick is that he is, so the injury stuff, hear ya. The hitting-wise stuff, like, he's the guy in that lineup. Like, Andrew Vaughn's not very good anymore. Benintendi stinks. He's the only threat. He comes here, and he's surrounded by Harper.
It's a great point.
And Schwarber.
It's a great point.
And Turner. Yeah. And I would bat him fourth. You have Boehm behind him, Castellanos behind him. You know, there's just so much upside with Luis Robert. Again, even a year ago, he had 38.
Yeah.
38.
Yeah, I know. Like, 38. Yeah.
I just, there's been a little bit too much Luis Robert sucks for me that I just can't take it. So that's the all-in move. If it's on the table, I don't know how Dave says no. The other moves are really interesting, you know, but it's just, if I could find a way to get Tanner Scott too, I would. But like, The Crochet Robert thing for me is it's right there. They want to trade both,
just
apparently, so they can get the most. You don't want him that package going to the Dodgers,
which would be the team most. Them or the Orioles, probably the two most. And even then, the Orioles probably not as much. Yeah, the Orioles are going to get a closer.
And the Red Sox apparently are interested in both of them, but like they're not really a threat to you.
No, but the Red Sox are winning games.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
Chaim Bloom didn't set him up so bad.
I actually like that Red Sox.
Ah, you Chaim Bloom. Yeah, you know? Just saying.
Core extended, so, you know. He will not be the Phillies manager
winner
for a little bit.
I think we're all right on that.
We're all right in the manager. But, man, I just, again, equal parts nervous and excited about the trade deadline.
Yeah. But. All right. So on Sunday, we are going to do our perfect deadline in addition to reacting to a really big Guardians. I almost said Indians.
I know.
Guardian series coming up here. It should be a fun one. Sunday, we'll really get into it. Let's get into it now, though. What a treat. What a treat it was. Extended time. Our guy gave us over 30 minutes of hanging and talking about the entire draft and really taking us inside the draft room. I thought some super fascinating stuff about what an MLB draft room is like, stuff you don't really get to hear that often. It was really a thrill. Let's go now to our interview with our guy, Brian Barber. All right, and it is our distinct pleasure to welcome back to the podcast during a very exclusive group of multiple-time guests on the pod, the Phillies director of amateur scouting, and since we last talked to him, now assistant general manager, our guy, Mr. Brian Barber. Brian, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great this morning. It's obviously been a busy last couple weeks for us on our end, but super excited with the haul we've got. Most of the guys are down in Clearwater as of today and starting their professional careers. And as always, it's an honor for me to be on the High Hopes podcast this morning.
Oh, you're way too kind, Brian. Way too kind.
We're going to have to cut that audio make sure we add that to the intro.
Right.
And I just want to give credit to James Seltzer. He did not call you Bill Barber.
I didn't. Well, so. we still have time. All right, let's not get carried away here. All right, my worst moment in the history of the pod. Thank you for bringing it back. Yes.
Just one of those surprise things at the end, just trying to make sure I remembered my own name.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. So you just wrapped up your fifth draft, which is crazy. You know, I mean, it's like 2020 feels like almost an eternity ago. I mean, how do you feel about, you know, this draft overall? And do you feel comfortable kind of with your draft process now that your fifth one's underway? Or do you feel like it's always kind of ever-changing?
I do think it's ever changing. It's evolving, and you always sit there after the draft process and go back and try to think, try to look over the things that you think you did well, the things that you think you can improve on, the process that's involved, the people that are involved are just, you know, since this is my 23rd year in scouting total, obviously fifth year over here with the Phillies running the draft, but you know, there's so many more people that work in baseball now and in different departments, and trying to be able to add all the information that they're able to bring to the table as well. It's an always evolving process and just trying to improve the way that you do things.
Yeah. And the one thing that I really want to kind of get your perspective on, or what it's like, can you, for as best as you can, take us inside the draft room, because obviously I'm curious about this. I think like our listeners are curious about this. Like when it reaches the 20s, I kind of envision it as like this chaotic scene. You're trying to get guys to get floated down. You're thinking about second rounders. Like what is kind of like inside the draft room as best as you can in the 20s as to the chaos level or kind of what you're doing?
Yeah, I think that the chaos level is more trying to find out what's going to happen in front of you. That we all have friends that work for other teams, and you're trying, like on my end, I'm trying not to bother the director of the other teams that they're doing important work on their end. But we all have friends that are all also in the draft room. So you get to a point, that, I mean, basically for about the first 20 picks, you just sit there and see who gets drafted and all the time that you spent watching those guys. And then when it gets to about pick 22, it starts getting, it's all right, let's see what we can find out. And you get to that point about pick 22 or 23, where unless something crazy happens, you basically know what's going to happen in front of you. So not only do you have the five minutes in between each pick, but you've also saved yourself about, you know, maybe 20 extra minutes of time. But basically, Jack and James, I mean, all that work has been done beforehand. Your board has been set up. The different scenarios that you're being presented, you should have already gone through, whether it's in the full group or in my own head, of what I think is going to happen. But, yeah, it happened the same way last year when we were able to take Aiden, where you had about the same amount of time, and this year it happened the same way. So the chaotic part is trying to find out who's going in front of you, not necessarily what you're going to do.
To that point you just made, I think it's so fascinating because I assume when you're doing a draft, and to your point, 22, 23, you've got a few guys that you're interested in or you would be willing to take at that spot. Do you know the guy you want no matter what? And have you been in a situation where, you know, that guy goes right before you or you always have a 1, 2, 3, 4, and if one gets taken, then we're taking two. And if two gets taken, then we're taking three. Do you always just trust your board implicitly? Or are there ever situations where guys are kind of similarly graded, you're in a similar spot, and you're kind of in those 5 minutes deciding who to take?
A little bit of both. You do, hopefully, like I said, you've gone through all the different scenarios in your head and you have the board lined up to where, hey, if this guy is here when we pick, we're going to take him. And yes, 100%, there are people that go in front of you that you liked a lot as well. And we're possibly hoping they were going to get to you. But, you know, like last year, it just happened to work out where Aiden Miller, it's like we really liked him. And he happened, and you know, and he does happen to get there for various reasons. And this year with Dante Norie, it's sort of the same thing. This is a guy that, like, I've had a man crush on going back to last year. I mean, we were able to watch him, and the first time I really, really bared down on him was about, you know, almost a year ago to the day from right now, as when we start doing the East Coast Pro Showcase and the area codes, and you watch those guys for about a 10-day run. And they're facing basically the best competition they're going to face for the rest of the time until they're drafted. They're using wood bats. They're playing on bigger fields, and you're able to see everything they can do there. And you know, that was it was a guy that I had pinpointed that I knew. And so, obviously, I'm not alone there. Several people in the room. It's like, we want him to be a Philly, and how can we make that happen?
Yeah, that's exciting. And I was going to ask you about Dante because there's a couple of things going on with him. Obviously, you know, I did appreciate, I was stuck in the Toronto airport and you took a Toronto kid. You know, I feel like you and I were on similar wavelengths. But, you know, he is an older high school kid. I mean, I think he's going to be close to 20. How much do you kind of factor that in? And, you know, a lot of the public boards, obviously they're not where the team boards, were a little bit lower on him. What really stood out to you as to why you want to make sure Dante Norie was a Philly?
Yeah, well, obviously, I don't think Dante lived in Toronto very long. He just happened to be there when his dad was coaching. And obviously, I don't know if you guys, obviously, his dad's an NBA coach, and they traveled a lot throughout his youth, so he was in Toronto at the time there. But in all honesty, my job is to know everything that I can know, and it's our job to know everything that we can know. So, yes, I know exactly where he was ranked on public rankings. And no, our boards do not line up the same way as those. You see that in every draft. I haven't gone through and done my total review yet of the entire draft, but I know of at least four or five guys that were drafted in the first round that publicly were not, you know, supposed to be first rounders. So, and going to the age thing, yes, it's a factor. There's no doubt about it. Younger is better, but in my mind, better is better than average, or good is better than. And this is a player that if he was 18, I don't think there's any chance he makes it to us. And we did the work in the right way. The way things were, you know, 20 years ago when we've done all these studies of why it's more advantageous to take an 18-year-old versus a 19-year-old are going back to the days where amateur scouts didn't see these players in the summer against the best competition, and you only saw them on the high school stage playing against 15, 16, 17-year-olds. And those 19-year-olds would dominate. We're just in a different world than we were back then, where we get 100 at-bats in the summer against the best competition. And I think it's our job to be able to evaluate those players individually, whether they're 17.9 or 19.6. So, younger is better, but good is better than not good. So I think Dante Norie is really, really good, and that's why we took him.
All right, Brian, I want to ask one more about the process and the whole thing, because I think it's fascinating to go into the draft room. We don't get those type of opportunities, especially in baseball. Sometimes you'll see those videos of football locker or, you know, draft rooms come out and stuff. Baseball, we very rarely get to go in there. So one more about that, and then I'll let Jack just completely nerd out with you.
We got a lot to cover, Brian. We got a lot to get into.
I'm going
to
just lay out and let Jack ask you about every single person that you drafted. But one more question about the process as it relates to the whole room. I know you and Preston work very closely. You know, how's your relationship moved since last year, in the past year, both assistant GMs now, but also, like, how does the room work with Dave Dombrowski in there? I know, like, again, to use football as a reference, at the end of the day, Howie Roseman, what he says goes. Is it super collaborative in that room? How involved in Dave? How involved is Dave? How involved is everyone? At the end of the day, do you just say, this is the guy we're taking if it comes down to that? How does that collaborative process work in the draft room?
Yeah, I mean, it's so basically I'll take you back. And we started, obviously we've done meetings, we've done talks and beforehand, but when we get to Philadelphia, it was July the 6th. So, the draft started on the 14th. So as a group in Philadelphia in the draft room, we started on July the 6th, and that was with scouts only in the room for 2 days. And I just wanted to get all their opinions before we brought in other people from different departments and to get their opinions, that I was totally aware of what every single scout thought on every player without, you know, being biased by anybody else in the room. And then after that, it just happened to turn out that we came back into town on the 8th, I believe it was, and more people joined the room. So Dave is there in every meeting that we have. Obviously, he does not stick around on necessarily guys we're going to talk about down the board. But whenever we're talking about a player that ends up on our main board, he's involved in those meetings and basically just listens. He'll turn to me and have a thought or a question, but very rarely does he speak in the room about who he likes or trying to pressure us on who to take. So you have, it's Dave, it's Sam Fold, it's Ani, it's Jorge, Preston, all those guys are in the room from the front office. We have various people from our analytics and R&D department that are in there, people that are dedicated to, you know, pitching stuff models and hitting models that we do. And then we have Brett Maley, who's our specific amateur scouting analyst, along with all the different scouts that are in there. So, yeah, I mean, we have people from four or five various departments that are in there. They all give their opinion. When it comes down to it, Dave turns to me and says, "What do you want to do, Brian?" And he allows me to do what I and we want to do there.
Love it.
Well, two names we didn't hear in there was obviously me and Seltzer, but we'll work on that. We'll work on that.
We do have to keep secrets on our end.
Yeah. I mean, listen, at least for the late round guys. I mean, we've got so many reliever types to get into.
Oh my God, you should, Brian. I know he's about to do it, but on our recap pod, the way he waxed poetic about your 11th through 16th round picks, it, honestly, Jack would have taken them all in the first round. That's how excited he is.
No, I think
I might let him give me the rundown instead of me doing the rundown.
I kid you not. I was in Canada. I was on vacation, which is probably a bad move by me. You know, being on vacation during the draft.
Be better.
Well, because like I'm trying to be engaged with the family, but hold on, man. Like we took Titan Hayes in the 11th, who's like, he's going to be a legend in this bullpen. We'll get to it. And we'll get to the Marcus Morgan being the next Luis Castillo. But
you're in for it, Brian. Yeah. That's the takeaway.
Yes. Let's go.
I want to talk about Griffin Burkholder because I thought he was a guy that was starting to rise late. Obviously the West Virginia commit seems like a really high makeup guy. You've talked a couple times about how he came to the CBP and kind of put on a show. What can you tell us about Griffin Burkholder?
Yeah, I mean, in the scouting world, he was not a late riser. In the publications, he might have been, but in the scouting world, from the very first game of the year, he had people, you know, high-level people going in to watch him. Probably the biggest negative on Griffin's year this year is he dealt with two different hamstring strains during the year and took him out of some games and times for people to be able to see him. So he's a phenomenal athlete. He's a phenomenal. He has phenomenal tools. He's been a hitter everywhere that we've seen him going back to last summer, throughout the spring. The show that he put on, not just at Citizens Bank Park when after his season was done, but also at the MLB Combine where he's averaging 102, 103, and he's maxing out at 110, 111 in batting practice, which is really, really impressive for an 18-year-old. The tools are ridiculous. They're really good. The ball player is really good. The makeup, the personality is awesome. Just couldn't be more excited to be able to bring him in as well at pick 63. I mean, obviously, the difference on the board between Dante Norrie and Griffin Burkholder was a lot closer than it happened to be in the draft. And I'm just, you know, super excited we were able to get him at pick 63.
Do you think he can stick in center field, or do you think he ends up more corner?
Oh, no doubt he can play center field.
That's awesome. I mean, because
that's a strong answer too.
No. He's at least on our scouting scale 70, which would be well above
average. Wow, that'll play.
I mean, he was the third fastest runner at the Major League Combine this year, and that was when he was still just getting back from his hamstring injury.
Wow.
So I mean, the speed is, again, Dante's speed is you know, 70 or 80 times, and Griffin's is at least a 70 as well. So,
well, I'm just about ready to go get my jersey. Don't you worry. And it's interesting because your first, you know, four out of your first five picks were more the speedy center field type. What was kind of the thought process behind that? Was just trying to get athletes in the building?
With Crawford already in the system, too. Yeah. You know, a guy like that already, too.
That one sort of lined up that way. That was not necessarily like a strategy going in. Obviously, you know, we as scouts, when the process starts for us in evaluating a player, tools are the first thing that we zero in on. And there's various things like in our scale. I'm not going to get into all of them, but there are like six various things that we're looking at in a player, and tools is the first thing that jumps out at you. So we're going to like players that have good tools and can hit as well. And I think that was just a combination of all those guys where it's like, we really like the tools. We really like the hit tool. And they have the performance to back it up on that end as well. So, you know, I will be honest, at a certain point in the draft, I turned to Preston and it's like, don't worry, I'm not going to give you any more center fielder. and that's all honesty, but at that point, you know, we have five teams, including the complex. You have three outfield spots, so you have 15 outfield spots that are being filled on an everyday basis in the minor leagues, and it's like, we have the room to bring them in. So I don't want to force their hands too much with things that they can't handle, but I'm just not going to pass up guys that early in the draft that we really like that just happen to play the same position right now.
Yeah, well, so, I will say for the next year and a half, I don't think a ball is going to fall in Jersey Shore or Clearwater.
We had some already there, and we just added a few more ball hawks out in the outfield.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So John Spikerman, your third-round pick from Oklahoma, had a broken handmate thing. You know, it seems like you guys like taking guys with broken handmate bones. Do you think that may have zapped a little bit of the power this year, and you think that he can get back to the pre-broken handmate kind of hit tool stuff?
Yeah, we do. I mean, one thing, now that he doesn't have a handmate, you don't have to worry about it breaking anymore. And there's really, once they come back from it, there's no real negative to that, you know, that consequence of not having the hamate bone. So we saw him before the injury. We really liked him. He came back. He hit really well after the injury. The impact on the ball wasn't quite there all the way yet because he did come back very quick from the injury, way quicker than we might do on the pro side, but also understandable of why he's doing it on his end as well. So it's again, the hit tool, the impact, the bat, especially from the left-handed side, and the ability to, you know, just the athlete and the makeup there as well with him was just too much to pass up for us in the third round to pick 100.
Yeah, speaking of the left side, Carson DeMartini probably would have gone higher if he didn't get hurt. Like, he seemed like one of the better college hitters in the draft. There is some swing and miss concern with him. I think he struck out like 70 times last year. Do you think that's more, like, do you guys watch that and say, that's something we can fix? Or do you think it's more, he's a year out from the labrum surgery, he'll get back to being the more earlier Carson DeMartini?
Combination of both there, Jack, where it's like we identified some things on our own, and then when we had the opportunity to meet with Carson in the room, at the time it was me and Luke Merton, who's our director of hitting, and Preston Mattingly, and we grilled him on the differences between, well, both the health and how that affected him this year, and then the differences between basically what you brought it up, the strikeout rate between his sophomore year in college and the junior year in college, and what changes he had made and why he tried to make them. And we talked that out a little bit and tried to, from our side, what he was telling us lined up exactly what we thought. And so we think we're going to like be able to come up with a marriage of the hip ability of his sophomore year along with the power of his junior year, and bring that back. Right now, obviously, he's gone through the physicals. He's a Philly. The shoulder that he dealt with is a lot less of a concern than even we thought going possibly into the draft. It should not be a concern from here on out.
Carter Matheson, he's, I think, sixth all-time in Indiana baseball history in home runs. Mm. So, I mean, listen, you took Nori, who's got Schwarber connections, Indiana, another Schwarber school. So you're going to the Midwest. You're going to the Big Ten. It seems like he's got a great eye at the plate. What can you tell us about Carter Matheson?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of both. He was identified by Derek Ross, our scout that runs that area, early on, going back to last fall, of a potential high pick. And he dealt with a few injuries along the way this year. They were on the very minor side, and it was just the guy at that point with the tool package, with the hit, with the power that we thought it was just weren't going to pass up. It's like you don't, before the draft, if you'd have told me we were going to take four center fielders out of our first five picks, I'd have thought you were crazy. But when the guys but when the guys end up being there, like I said, baseball is so different than all the other sports, and you just don't have to worry about that. And it's just, do you think he's the best player when you pick? Yes, let's take him. We have room to figure that out. Like I said, we have various teams that these guys can play on, and the center fielder can also play right field or left field at times as well. So we have, like I said, we have 15 outfield spots in the five minor league teams. We have plenty of room for these guys to develop.
I think listeners love to hear that. I know that whenever we talk any sort of draft, all people want is take the best dude there. Like, take the guy who you believe is the best player and figure it all out later. So it seems like that's kind of the philosophy, and we appreciate that.
Well, good. I really think that's what we try to do. Once Jack gets into his rundown on the day three relievers that we took, it's like we are trying to find big leaguers every single pick. And the further you get down, probably the smaller opportunity is for these guys. But when they bring in like one special quality or two special qualities or a big pitch, a big two pitches. So you're not going to get the total package at pick 400 in the draft. You're just not going to. So what can I find that we can identify that gives that guy an opportunity to play in the big leagues, to impact our Phillies team, to have value in the industry? You're looking at all those different things. So you just want to try to bring in, quality people, quality tools, quality performance, various degrees of all those things. And it's not always going to be the total package with all these guys. I can tell you that every single board, every single player on the board, I can find a negative with them, whether that's pick one or pick 615.
So. Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I do think that you did build the 2026 bullpen going about going from like round nine on.
So just so you know, with that comment, Brian, that Jack has been talking about the 2026 Phillies since we started the podcast in 2017.
You're building towards it. You're building towards it.
I do think most of us in the organization are a little more zeroed in on the 2024 Phillies.
Right? Me too, buddy. Me too.
But with 2026 in mind. So.
Right. And hopefully your boss and our favorite Dave Dombrowski is focused on 2024 well. So let's get into it. Cameron Hill.
Now we're
really getting into the weeds here. I mean, Cameron Hill, you talk about a wipeout slider and dominating the Cape. I mean, that's what I saw. Is Cameron Hill one of those guys where it's like, all right, there's the one pitch that's obviously pretty wipe out, and that's his slider?
Yeah, you sort of go to identifying with sort of the same thing. Last year on the Cape, Cam was one of the better pitchers there. It's minimal amount of innings that they throw. If I remember right offhand, I think it was 36 innings that he threw in the Cape, but we identified a 6'6 athletic left-hander that's up to 96, 97 at times with a good slider. It hasn't replicated at Georgia Tech for his career, but we also saw the flashes of it. And when you're trying to find guys like that in the eighth round, the building blocks that he has to begin with, the 6'6 athletic left-hander up to 96, 97 with the slider, it's like you're not going to do a whole lot better than that. And then when you add the makeup that he has, the intelligence that he has, and the idea of some of the things that we are to identify that we think we can improve there, it was like, okay, I'm not passing that up there at that point.
Brian, you just talking. It's so funny because we're similar ages. Like when I was growing up, when I was a kid, like you would have just said he throws 97, he's a lefty. I'd be like, oh, he must be one of the best pitchers in the sport. Like it is so amazing what these guys do now.
Yeah, we're in a different world. Yeah. As like I said, as we go into that, you'll hear various guys. I mean, we'll get into it right now. I mean, Titan Hayes, our 11th round pick, has been north of 100 miles an hour.
Yeah,
I mean, the idea that you're going to find, and obviously it's a reliever and he's had some health history, but you're to find a guy that's been north of 100 miles an hour in the 11th round at pick 342 is just nuts. It's still nuts to me as well.
It really is. It's nuts.
It's awesome. And listen, I know that you have your draft philosophy, my draft philosophy. You know, just give the ball to Travis Hergert, and let him kind of cook down there. So I think we're on the same page there. Marcus Morgan, of all your draft picks, I think he's my favorite. Like Griffin Perkholder, Dante Norrie, very excited about.
Yeah.
But Marcus Morgan, like you just watch him, and you could see that there's obvious tweaks that he could make, and he's turning into, I mean, there's like legitimate high-end starter upside of Marcus Morgan for me.
Yeah, it's one of the more frustrating guys for us that we watch, and there's no blame to be put on anybody, and whether that's more, you know, Marcus, you know, we've talked to him quite a bit before the draft and now after the draft about pitch usage and different things, and they're different guys, so don't take this too far, but what we're going to do with Marcus is a lot similar to what we did with George Klaassen once we drafted him. Going to try to simplify a lot of things that he does right now, simplify it to the things that he does really well, allow the arm talent, the slider, the sweeper to play, and just zero in on those right away and get him moving in the right direction. The type of arm that he has, we've seen him up to 98. He's got a sweeper that grades out as well above average. And just try to simplify a few different there's two things we've identified in the delivery that we're going to try that we think are going to make an a very quick turnaround in the strike throwing, get him throwing his fastball more often, and then have those wipeout breaking balls as the out pitches.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
I wish you could see Jack right now, Jack.
And
we're only over the phone right now. Jack is like bouncing in his seat with the biggest smile.
This is great. This is my favorite thing of all time.
I can tell.
You know, when we got on last year, I remember you guys joking around about Jack being a draft nerd, and it's like, I am too. And we get deep into the weeds on these guys and try to find out the things that we like about the players. Like I said, there's negatives on every single player on the board, but to try to find the things that you identify as being positive and the things that these guys can do and how we can either improve that, accentuate it, and can we either live with the negative or can we improve it? You know, those are all things that we're trying to identify, you know, throughout the year, but, you know, especially in the draft room itself.
Yeah. So in the later middle rounds, you went for some other funky looks. I want to talk about AJ Wilson because, I mean, he looks like he'd get big league outs right now with that sweeper. I mean, I think it's graded out as one of the best sweepers from the left side in the country. I mean, AJ Wilson, he just kind of looks like a big leaguer.
Yeah, AJ's an older kid, but as we've all seen in professional baseball, that players take jumps at ages 22, 23. Sometimes at age 26, they take a big jump. So it's our job to stay on these players and identify those. So, yeah, we've got a big left-handed pitcher that's up to 95, and his sweeper grades out as well above average or higher on our stuff model scale. So, we, you know, does he, and he throws it a lot, and he struck out a lot of guys with it, and he got a ton of swings and misses with it. You know, one thing that we'll have to figure out is, does it stay at that 75% usage level? Does that drop down a little bit to allow the fastball to play maybe slightly better? But again, it's a guy that when you have left-handed and that type of grade on a slider sweeper, it's just like how can you pass it up then?
I agree. I promise. Only a couple more, James. I promise.
Don't promise me. Yeah, I'm here. I love it.
Teagan Kane. I mean, the stuff immediately kind of pops. But again, a little bit more of a funky look. Kind of seems like you guys went more for some different looks this year out of some of the bullpen guys late. What can you tell us about Teagan Kane?
Yeah, Teagan is a guy that just this past year, he dropped down his arm slot. He was more of a traditional three-quarter to high three-quarter guy in the past, and he dropped it down to low three-quarter to almost sidearm at times, and all of a sudden he gained velocity. And he went from throwing in the low 90s to the, you know, to the upper 90s with that arm slot, and he's got the slider to go with it. So it's a guy that, you know, once we saw the pop and stuff with that, it was, and just like you brought up, you are trying to find something that these players that do unique, that give them value, that give them prospect upside, that give them an opportunity to play in the big leagues. And so you get a low, you know, a low three-quarter sidearm guy that's up to 97, 98, we saw him up to this year with the slider. It's like you don't see a whole lot of those guys in the big leagues. Maybe that gives them an opportunity to get there. So, again, it's sometimes it's as simple as that, unique qualities with really good stuff.
Yeah. Luke Gabrysch was a kid. So he was St. Joe's kid, local kid. He was like, I guess he's a row away from the Bedlam of the Bank home run. So, like, obviously.
Took a picture with the ball,
yeah,
which is great.
Awesome.
I actually didn't know that until after the draft.
Oh, cool.
So
yeah,
cool. Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. But so he had like a 6 ERA, I think, at St. Joe's. Went to the draft league. You guys seem to like the draft league. I think you took Devin Saltaban after out of the draft league last year. A couple guys in the draft league. And then Luke went there and was a closer for his team. What do you think about Luke Gabrysch?
Yeah, it's one of the advantages of the later draft. I'm not sure there are a ton of them on our side, but one of the advantages of the later draft is the opportunity to continue seeing these guys play. And maybe they get in a different role, or maybe they get, you know, rested or are off an injury. In Devin Saltaban's case, obviously the biggest advantage there was us being able to see him against better competition than we saw in a high school in Hawaii. But Luke got to the draft league, and all of a sudden the stuff popped there. And the late inning roles, and we also had an opportunity to bring him to Citizens Bank Park for a workout before the draft as well. And again, it's a low slot guy. It's up to 97. The sweeper grades out, you know, in the 60s to 70 range on our scouting scale. And I, you know, you don't know what's going to happen with all these guys. I don't know. I mean, we identified him at St. Joe's, but also identified a different player in the draft league at our workout. And if we can continue to get what he showed us there in those outings, then I think we've got a pretty good pick in the 15th round.
And last one here, Eli Trapp, seems like an elite extension. Like he can get really low. I think it was like almost in the fives extension wise.
Yeah.
And also another, like you said, up to 97 per usual.
All of them.
So dude, it was like you throw 98. Okay, you're a Philly. Yep. What can you tell us about Eli Trapp?
Yeah, he's got one of those, you know, we've had guys call him like a unicorn fastball that you just don't see very often, where the combination of extension, the ride to the fastball, the VAA qualities that he has on there. And the huge swing and miss rates that he was able to get on those, and he uses it a lot. His fastball, the velocity was down early in the year. He got it back. He's got it back at the end of the year, and we saw it all last year. So he was, you know, obviously a UPenn guy. He was committed to go to Texas afterwards. He got a hold of us and just said that he wanted to sign. And once we figured that out, it was like a no brainer. A unique quality you're looking for, and I think the guy has a unique fastball. And it, actually, his slider grades out pretty well, and we think we can build some more confidence with him there with that pitch as well. All of a sudden, you get, you know, I'll continue to say it, like a unicorn fastball in the slider that improves. Pretty good combination.
Listen, if you say unicorn fastball.
I was in on unicorn. You didn't even say anything after it. It was like, I heard unicorn. I was like, I am so into
unicorn fastballs in the 15th round,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah.
God, I love the draft.
Jack's so excited.
Oh, I'm so
and
happy.
Thank you for humoring us and letting us dive so deep on all
I
these.
Love talking about these guys. Like I said, this is my world. And when we do the draft, like for all of us that are in the room on the scouting side, this is our World Series. This is our Super Bowl. You know, we work the 365 days of the year for July 14th through the 16th this year. So it's really important and meaningful to us. It's meaningful to the organization and what direction it's going, what we're able to do, whether that's just industry value and trades or getting to the big leagues and helping those guys win. So what we realize what we do is important, and it's really important to us, and these players are really important to us.
We love that. And you actually just, my last question, you actually just led into it. It's a perfect lead-in, so thank you. Oh, you're on fire right now. I always wonder, you know, a guy in your role, and you mentioned it, look, you understand the business of baseball. The Phillies are the best team in baseball right now, best record, you know, trying to win a World Series. They're going to make trades. That's going to happen. The trade deadline is 5 days away. When you're a good team, you trade prospects and try and add to the major league team. But you're the guy who took these guys, who scouted them, who put all this time and effort. And I know you're helping the team, and I know at the end of the day it's your job and you understand the business and all that, but how hard is it just personally for you to kind of see some of your babies, so to speak, some of these guys that you put all this effort into, that you believe in their future on your team, get traded away? You understand the baseline and know that, that it's for the good of the Phillies and that's all that matters. But is there a part of you that it's, this is a tough time of year for you in a way?
Yeah, it's hard, and I've had the opportunity to work for a couple of pretty good organizations, and I was with the Yankees before this, and that was just part of what we dealt with there as well for 18 years. And my 5 years here now, and obviously we've improved the last few of those 5 years to where, you know, we are I don't think we're one of the better major league teams in baseball. We're one of the better organizations in baseball from top to bottom now. I think we're getting there. So, yeah, it's hard. It's hard when we sign a player in the off season and we lose draft picks for it. But you also look and it's like, okay, am I mad we got Zach Wheeler? No.
Yeah.
No. So it's like, I'm fine. You know, do I wish we had all our picks? Yeah, I do. But I'm more happy that we have Trey Turner and Zach Wheeler on our team. So, you know, when the time comes that the potential trades and the guys that are talked about, you have to take off your bias cap of the person that drafted them. And is this the best move for the Phillies organization? So, and for the major league team, it's not just, you know, and it's always not just a now thing, is how does this affect our team both now and in the future? So you're trying to, you know, you're trying to balance those two things out and take off your bias cap of, yes, I'm the guy that originally brought the player in, but what is the best opportunity for the Phillies right now?
Yeah.
It's a hard balance, I can tell you that.
Yeah, it's got to be. But we'll protect the guys, don't you worry. We'll do the best that we can. And final one for me, again, can't thank you enough for your time. Oh, are we going to see each other in the locker room again in October?
Yeah, buddy.
I mean, come on. That was special.
I can tell you what, that's the plan right now. And obviously we've got some things. We'll see what happens within the next week where the Phillies team is. But right now we're riding high. It's a good team. And I sure hope I see you again, some champagne pop in there.
Oh,
all right.
Yes.
We'll start talking 2025 draft in a little bit. Sure, don't you worry.
Well, I can tell you this, we're already out seeing the players. So, our board is not nearly done. We've got a lot of time for that, but we're already out scouting them.
Well, Brian, get back to scouting. I can't tell you how much we appreciate the extended time. I've already told you that you made Jack's, I was going to say week, it might be year here.
I needed this pick me up after the last couple series.
Yeah, I know.
Needed to pick me up.
I think our listeners are going to really appreciate this interview instead of us talking about yesterday's game. So seriously, Brian, thank you so much, man. We can't tell you how much we appreciate it.
James, Jack, thank you for the time. I appreciate the support from you guys, and I hope everything that we do is going to prove you guys right with your support. So thank you.
Yep, and I'm sure the listeners are excited about AJ Wilson, Tegan Kane, Eli. Like they really, that's where they were like, all right, there's the nitty gritty.
I hope from Dante Norry down to Kyler Carman, 20th round, and the six post draft guys. I hope they're all names that eventually they will know.
Yes.
Thank you again. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're the best. Thank you, Brian. Dude, he's the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just the best. He was so fired up to talk to. I can't believe it. I'm like, why are you fired up to talk to us? We're fired up to talk to you, my friend.
I spared you the 15th or 20th round pick,
that,
by
which
the
was
way.
Nice of you. Yeah. I was shocked. I thought you were going to go every single one.
So, you want to know my problem was?
Yeah.
Couldn't find videos on Twitter of those
there
guys.
There you go. Yep. Okay. Yep. Okay. So that's, you would have.
Easily, dude. You kidding me? You kidding me? But yeah, dude, obviously we're rooting for him.
I'm so all in on Brian Barber.
I think they've done a really good job. Obviously, I have my questions about Dante Norry. I think that he did a really good job.
He made me feel, because again, obviously I know nothing about Dante Norry other than his name and what you have told me, and you being a little lukewarm at first. He made me feel a lot better about it.
And just remember, I was lukewarm about Justin Crawford and Andrew Painter.
Yes, and Andrew
too.
Painter. Yeah, exactly. So let's keep that in mind.
Let's keep that all
Jack
in
is
mind.
Not infallible with this stuff. In fact, he's quite fallible.
But way fallible, except about Marcus Morgan.
And Aiden Miller, man. You nailed that.
I did nail Aiden Miller.
All over that.
Yeah.
So,
It was, by the way, heating up a little bit at Jersey Shore. Yeah, got a little groin injury.
Let's hope he's still someone we love in 5 days. Okay?
Yeah. Let's hope he's a Philly. We'll do whatever we can. And for the listeners that don't care about the draft, I'm very sorry.
No, it was. Look, if you like baseball, it's got to be interesting.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
And look, think about it this way. Maybe not all of them, but like someone who we talked about that interview could end up being someone who is you're wearing his jersey someday. Think about that, you know? All right, you got anything else?
No.
All right, we'll be back on Sunday. Perfect deadline. React to the Guardians here. Can we, Jack, we were joking around earlier in the season. Oh, you know, let's sweep. 2 of freaking 3.
2 of 3,
okay?
Baby.
Enough already. Enough.
And trade for Nathan Eovaldi.
Joe. Just throwing that in there.
No, I need him.
You need him.
The second that Morosi...
He's your Adam Duvall. It's Adam Duvall and Nathan Eovaldi are the two.
The second Morosi tweeted about starters, I was like, go get me Eovaldi.
Oh.
Who and look, struck out 10 and 6 last night, by the way.
Who was, maybe Rosenthal or someone point out that, like, Dombrowski did this. Like, he had the best rotation in baseball in 2018 and went out and got David Price. You know what I mean?
14,
excuse me. Yes.
He did get Price again when he went to the
Red
Sox.
Yes, he did get Price again when he went to the Red Sox. Yes. But exactly. In Detroit. I mean, I was thinking of the Red Sox. But yes, that's what I meant when he got it. Yeah.
I think I told you that.
Well, someone just tweeted it too. I just saw, you might have told me that too. But either way, I just saw a tweet about it.
Yes.
So.
You're stealing my points.
No, they did.
Per usual.
I forgot you said it. So there you go. Shows how impactful it was.
Yep.
All right. We'll be back later in the week. Until then. Or we could be back emergency. We're standing by,
yep.
Dave. We're standing by. Until then, he's Fritz and Seltzer.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.